All right, everyone. It's the Grim Lord here, and this is Grim Interviews. We've got Revy from Revy Innovations back again. And this time, you're going to talk to us about how to get a small business started, which is what I think a lot of guys, you know, want to know about. Like, that's something I'm kind of actually a little interested in myself. So, I'm going to go ahead and hand over the mic to you, and you go ahead and just, you know, reintroduce yourself for those that are new, and go ahead and talk.
All right. Yeah, so I'm Revy. I run Revy Innovations, and I have the SRP, and I created a bunch of other things now. And I also run an engineering consulting firm on the side. Today's topic is entrepreneurship, small business, and consulting. This is kind of related to the previous work on engineering, and the reason why is because in order to pull off what I am describing, it is expected that you have a marketable skill. So if you have a degree in 18th century English literature, this isn't going to work for you. But if you have, like, say, mechanical engineering or software engineering or something, then this is going to work. So, first thing to go over is consulting, because that's the easier thing to do. And specifically is 1099. So 1099, oh, stop me if you have any questions, by the way.
Okay.
All right.
So 1099 is basically means contractor, and contractor is, let's put it this way, it's a form of working, it's a way of working that gives you more freedom and also allows you to bypass a lot of the bullshit of progressivism. It allows you to bypass affirmative action. And so I'm explaining what contracting is. Typically, people talk about, when people say contractors, this contractors is synonymous with a 1099. A 1099 is a form given to you by the, is it given, no, a form, the 1099 is a form given to you to help you pay your taxes. So contractors get what's called a 1099.
Okay.
And employees get what's called a W-2.
Yeah.
So if you're an employee, you get a W-2 at the end of the year for you to pay your taxes. And if you're a contractor, you get a 1099. That is the big black and white difference between a contractor and a W-2.
Okay.
So what are they meant to be? An employee is meant, I'm going to go over what they are and then why it's beneficial to be a contractor. If, well, why a 1099, why 1099 is the master rate if you're making that.
Okay.
So first, what is a employee? What is a contractor? And what is a miscategorized employee? So an employee basically means you work for someone else, and you are basically their agent.
Yeah.
They get to boss you around to do whatever. And that's what most people consider employees. As an employee, you have access to certain rights. For example, unemployment rights. You can sue for sexual discrimination.
Sure.
I think healthcare is somewhere in there. But your employer can also force you to do certain things, like take certain trainings. Obviously, most of that diversity training, if you're an employee,
sure.
They're going to force you to do that. They might also, they can decide your hours. And they can basically, they can tell you how to do your job, basically. Not that they always do, which I've worked a lot of employment jobs in which nobody's ever told me what hours I had to work, but told me how to do my job. But that's typically a standard for employees. Now, a contractor is officially a small business. So if you're a contractor and a company hires you as a contractor instead of an employee, they're not directly hiring you. They're hiring a company. And you're an employee of this company. So basically, if someone hires me and I'm as a contractor, as a consultant, whatever, they hire my company and then my company sends me as an agent, and I'm the owner of this company. I am the sole employee of this company.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm basically the company, but there's a couple, this gives us a couple interesting distinctions. Number one, I am basically delivering a service. So the employer, if they want to, the client can tell me how to do my job, but they're less likely to. They might, another thing about contractors is if it's a contractor, you can work fixed rate. For example, someone can hire me to do a specific project and I will get paid a certain amount for that project. I don't necessarily have to do hourly. Now, right. I do hourly. I can go into that later.
Okay.
As to why I still do hourly, even though I can do fixed rate. But employer can't, the client can't tell me how to do my job. Client can't tell me what hours to work, or at least they're not supposed to. And although it depends on the situation. So I'm given more freedom. What is the downside of being a contractor? As a contractor, I'm not an employee, and therefore I don't have any employee rights.
Sure.
I don't get unemployment. I don't get health insurance. If I am sexually harassed, I cannot sue.
Sure.
And if you think about it, it actually kind of makes sense. Because if I, like, let's say that I'm being sexually harassed and I want to sue for sexual harassment.
Sure.
Who am I going to sue?
Yeah.
I can't sue the client because I don't work for the client. I work for my own company. Mm-hmm. But I'm obviously not going to sue my own company, right?
Yep.
So as a contractor, you have more freedom, but you also have fewer rights. And it's kind of expected that you're able to stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
So you're given a bit more respect, a bit more agency, as it were. And then there's also a thing known as miscategorized employee. Because most people are looking at that like, they're listening to my description and they're like, no, that's not what a contractor is. A contractor is a basically lower rank employee. And that's what we call a miscategorized employee. What happens is there are companies and they want to hire employees, but they don't want to give them benefits. Let's say, I have a lot of skills. So most companies will try to hire me as an employee because they want to show that they value my skills. And so they want to give me these benefits. But let's say there's someone else that's not so skilled and a company isn't sure if they want to hire them or not. What they'll do is they'll hire them as a contractor. And as a contractor, that person won't have any access to any of the employee rights. But also, the company can fire that person very easily.
Yes.
So a lot of times companies will hire people that they don't care about as contractors, because that way the contractor doesn't get the employee rights. But the company will still treat the contractor as if they were an employee. They will still mandate what hours they work. They will mandate exactly how they do their job.
Sure.
They will make them attend training, right?
Right.
So this is what we call a miscategorized employee. They're supposed to be an employee, but the company hires them as a contractor because they don't want to give them the employee rights. And it's technically illegal, but it's never enforced, mainly because the government does it themselves.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So do we have clarification? This is...
Absolutely. I understand. It sounds like it's technically illegal. You shouldn't be able to... Like, if you're a contractor, yeah, they shouldn't be able to do that to you, but they still get away with it. And you, like you said, most government contractors are like that. They're just hired hands, and what is that, just contractor and title alone? I mean, because they're technically an employee at that rate.
We'll say my friend at Graphic Design.
They're treated as employees, but they're paid as contractors, and if you pay someone using a 1099, you can fire them without any consequences.
Right.
Technically illegal. I think it's fine because I think employer rights are bullshit. You should be able to hire and fire at will.
Right.
So I don't care. I don't have a judgment on it. But my point is, these are the definitions. And so if you are a, so when I say 1099 master race, what I mean is you're a true consultant. You run a small business. The company treats you as a small business. But there's also kind of a blurry line between miscategorized employees and true contractors. So next topic, why is 1099 the master race? Because 1099 contractors don't have the same rights that employees do, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a couple advantages to being a contractor, and there's a lot of the disadvantages are actually kind of advantages. So because as a contractor, you don't have workers' rights, and you don't have benefits, what happens is because the company doesn't pay you benefits, the company will actually pay you more as a contractor.
Oh, okay.
The contractors are paid more than employees.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Usually about 15% more. And that's an interesting fact. So the idea is, if, let's say this company gives, the employees have, say, maternity leave, right?
Yeah.
That's a common worker benefit. As a man, you're not going to use this maternity leave, right?
Right.
So you would rather get the money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's say health insurance, right? Let's say that you go to the gym and you eat healthy and you don't want health insurance.
Right.
Right? Maybe you don't trust the healthcare system.
Right.
So you don't get health insurance. You'd rather get the money.
Right.
Right? So getting the money means that in exchange for not getting benefits, you can get more, you can basically buy whatever you want. You're expected to basically provide your own benefits. And so that's the advantage, that's one of the advantages. But the other thing is that as a contractor, there are certain advantages that you're more hireable as a contractor, but you're also more fireable. So one of the things about being an employee is a company can't hire an employee lightly because it's hard to fire an employee. But if they're a contractor, you can fire them there's nothing wrong with firing a contractor.
Right.
Usually, like as a contractor myself, people don't usually hire me indefinitely. Usually people hire me for a specific project. When the project's over,
yeah.
I'm gone.
Yeah.
Hopefully I did a good enough job and they hired me for the next contract. But it's kind of expected that contractors are just fired at the end of the project. So it's super easy to fire a contractor.
So,
but that also means it's easier to get hired. I think a lot of these worker benefits are bullshit. Like, for example, unemployment. Like, what the fuck is that? One of the big ones is no overtime.
Right.
As an employee, you're expected to be paid overtime, 50%, something like that, right?
Sure.
And also, but the problem is a lot of people and a lot of companies, either the company won't let the employees work overtime because they don't want to pay them the 50% extra, right, the time and a half.
We know one of those places.
Yep.
And contractors aren't held to the same thing. So a lot of time, contractors will be allowed to work more than 40 hours a week, and the company will just pay them just time. They won't pay them overtime, but they'll actually be allowed to work overtime.
Sure.
Just not get paid the extra 50%.
Sure. Let's see.
I think that being a contractor is more pure because you're doing work, you're getting money. There's none of this we're all family bullshit. These are our benefits bullshit, healthcare. It's straight up, I do work, you give me money. If I do a good job, you hire me for the next project. And it also lets you do fixed rates, which is another advantage.
Well,
here's a big advantage.
I was going to talk about, though, you said that, you constantly, if you do good on one project, somebody will hire you for the next. Well, one thing I wanted to know, the projects that you're doing right now under your company, are those projects that you just came up with on the fly, or did you get hired to do, like, for instance, the doll shoes and stuff like that? Is that something that somebody hired you to do, or is that just something you decided, this might be a good idea and let's try it?
Yeah, that's not consulting. Like, that is what I would call entrepreneurship, small business.
Okay.
I'll get into that later.
Okay.
But that is not what I, usually people will hire me. Usually what happens is there's some company, they have an idea, they think they can build this thing and then sell it for money, right? And they will hire me to do the engineering work. And they'll be like, hey, design this thing. We'll pay you, so many $1,000s.
Sure.
And then I'll do it. I'll submit it. They'll test it, make sure it works. And then they'll give me the money.
Mm-hmm.
See how simple that is?
Oh, yeah.
There's no, Yeah. Right. But and obviously, if I don't do a good job, they won't hire me again.
Sure. But,
I like it because I think it's pure. It's not exactly the most stable work.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because usually the way it works is companies will hire employees, and the employees will be guaranteed 40 hours a week. They won't work more than 40 hours a week, but they won't work less than 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
And then as the company's demand increases or decreases, they satisfy that buffer using contractors. That's usually the way most companies operate. And so, because you're basically that, like, satisfy demand, it's a very, it's not a stable employment at all. Oh. So you do need to learn to put away money.
Yeah.
We call it feast or famine, right? Either you have so much, like, either you have no work and you're basically unemployed, and you're just calling people up and, hey, you got work for me, hey, you got work for me, or you're, like, doing networking, trying to sell yourself, and then what happens is, the next month, you get like three contracts in, and you're working like 800 hour work weeks. You have no rest, but oh my God, the money is coming in.
Right.
So much money. So that's feast or famine. And that's a common thing. The main advantage for MGTOW is that, number one, sometimes they make you take their training, but usually they don't.
Okay.
Usually as a contractor, or sometimes they call it a vendor, or outside consultant, something like that. Usually you don't have to take the diversity training. That's always nice. But the big advantage is, as a contractor, you are not a human. You are a company.
Okay.
And a company doesn't have a gender.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a race. Cool. So when a company hires, normally a company has to hire, like, say, 50-50 men and women, right?
Yeah.
But if they hire you as a contractor, you are a company. A company doesn't have a gender. You are not included in that count.
Right. So you wouldn't have to take all the diversity training and all that, because you're not even technically an employee at that point. So you wouldn't have to do what the employees do. They would hire you, but not for the same job that they hire the employees for. I think I'm starting to get it now.
Yeah.
A lot of the time what happens is you will get hired for the same job the employees do,
mm-hmm.
but because you're not technically their employee, they won't train you.
Right. But you're expected
you're expected to already be trained.
Yeah.
That's the expectation.
Yeah.
All right. Now, in some cases, what happens is we have, like, government contracts, military contracts. It's expected that everyone down the chain gets trained. So, and sometimes the contractors are forced to take training, especially with government contracts, because that's where the regulation comes in. But,
So I have a question, because this might get a little personal, but, you know, in the past I didn't work for them. Basically, I was commissioned to do certain things and they would pay me for them. What is like commission work? Like when basically they say, hey, these are records we want you to cover, like to write reviews for. Is that the same kind of thing? Because obviously they have their, you know, I'm basically doing work for them. But I'm not an employee. Like, no. They can get rid of me whenever they want to. I'm just a literal hired.
Yeah, you're a contractor.
Okay.
You do contracting work.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
And if you go back and you look at your tax returns, you got a 1099.
Okay.
They did not give you a W-2. They gave you a 1099.
Well, they paid me. They paid me too poor to actually continue with the job, but they did absolutely pay me. It was just, it wasn't enough money to really make a 1099 for, is what I'm saying. But yes, they did pay me.
So you got paid less than $600?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, you were a contractor. If you had earned more than $600, they would have sent you a 1099.
Okay. All right. I'll keep that in mind, because I didn't know what the limit was.
Isn't the $600 thing recent also? Is this... Listen only.
You can talk if you want. If you have a question, go ahead.
Yeah, please ask questions, because this is... I know this stuff, but it's not like go too fast.
Okay, because I'm a dude who's basically been working the whole freelance, self-employed thing for his entire adult life. But the $600 thing popped up this year.
Okay,
when I have a question,
that.
Though, I'll pop in.
The $600 thing has been around for a long time. It's always been a thing.
Okay.
Now, as far as I can remember, it's been $600. You have to give someone $10.99. Now, here's where I think you got in the gray zone. Where if you were getting paid by, say, Upwork or eBay, what happens is Upwork or eBay, these companies will consider themselves marketplaces.
Okay.
They're not clients. So if you take two clients, $500 each from Upwork, right? That counts as two separate contracts. So because each client paid you less than $600, neither one of them has to give you a $10.99.
Okay.
Now, recently they changed the law.
Oh.
Now Upwork and eBay are considered clients. Therefore, if you earn, say, $500 from two different clients on Upwork, because Upwork has paid you more than $600, they had to give you $10.99.
Yeah, because I've noticed even in the flea market world, they've gotten to be more form heavy.
Yeah. And you might have also just been working under the table. And I think I heard something about Joe Biden's administration being given more money to crack down on the 1%. And by 1%, they mean small business.
Okay. Now that's, yeah, that's not...
That might also be it.
That
So maybe you're getting paid under the table, and whoever was paying you got scared.
Well, you run an auction. Yeah. He runs a booth.
Maybe auctions work differently because
well,
it isn't
a
service.
I run a booth, but I was looking into other businesses. No, I was looking into consignment shops earlier in the year and noticed a bunch of red tape that wasn't there before popping up. Okay. Is all.
I'm mostly familiar with the service industry.
Okay.
So people will hire you to do a service, like design a product.
Because he pretty much has his own. You have your own retail shop. You basically have your own store.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with selling physical products.
Right.
Or at least, I want to say I'm not. I mean, I sell the SRP.
Yeah, additionally, I do odd jobs as well, which is my other, I'm also relevant in this regard.
Oh, yeah, okay. I understand that. That's like when you, like, fix somebody's, you know, stuff like that. Is that even considered... Is odd jobs really considered a form of contracting? Like if you you go around and fix people's stuff and they pay you a certain
it's
sum of money. Is that
under
the table or is that... Because I know a lot of people, especially in parts of the rural South, that do a lot of these old odd jobs.
A lot of lawn
like fixing things, repairing stuff. You know, is that even... I don't even think that's considered close to contracting.
Well,
I think that's more like just under-the-table work.
If it's a profession like plumbing and all that.
Like plumbing, yeah, definitely.
That's contract because they had to... It's a business.
Sure.
So there's two... there's another thing, which is known as just like a straight-up business.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't consider them contractors. I would just consider them small business.
Okay.
As a contractor, you're kind of a pseudo replacement for an employee.
Ah, I see.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Like a contractor is usually a contractor is a replacement for an employee. Usually.
Like,
they do the same work as employees. They just got hired on a slightly different arrangement.
Yeah, military contracts out for different things besides. Like my friends in graphic design in the military, I'm sure that's, you know, they just go to different firms and recruit them.
Well, That's like with the anime industry. A lot of those are contractors because basically they get together, they draw everything, they do the cartoon, and after the thing comes out, they move to another project, and then they move to another project. They get paid for the project. That's all they get paid for. So unless it does extremely well...
They're contractors.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah. Now, there's another detail to this, which is regarding the whole $600, $1099 thing.
Okay.
If you incorporate your business, so if you work as a contractor, you're automatically get paid by 1099. I have incorporated as an LLC. So this is something I recommend if you're actually bringing in a significant amount of money. And by significant amount of money, I mean over $600. You should incorporate as an LLC. It's fairly cheap. You just go search up like LLC formation, something or another. Usually you want Wyoming, don't use Legal Doom. I use a Buffalo registered agent.
Okay.
They charge, I think, $300. And they create an LLC for you. They do all the legal work and get an LLC. The advantage of LLC certain legal advantages. Mm-hmm. But the main advantage...
Wait, these websites do the actual legal work now? I thought they just gave you the forms.
Yeah, that is the legal work. I pay them for $300. They file some paperwork with the Secretary of State. And after like a month, they send me some paperwork. And they're like, here, your company's been formed.
Wow.
Go do whatever. This is your EIN number. An EIN number, by the way, is a... The reason why you want to incorporate as an LLC, the main reason, is because you get an EIN number.
Okay.
An EIN number, also known as an employer identification number, is a company social security number. So when people ask for your social security number, instead of giving them your personal social security number, you give them your EIN.
Oh,
of your company.
Okay.
And that way they'll see your company.
Right.
The advantage of this is number one, you can use EIN to open a bank account. That way you can keep your personal assets and your business assets kept. It's better for your accounting that way.
Yeah.
You can write off more shit.
See, I have
I'll get into writing stuff off later.
For this.
But the other advantage is that if you want to keep your identity hidden.
Right.
Like for example, if you ask for Revy Innovations, right? If you ask for my social security number, I'm going to give you the employer identification number of Revy Innovations LLC. And you can go Google Revy Innovations LLC. You can see what name comes up. It's not my name. It's the name of my lawyer.
Sure.
This one dude is like, he has his name on like probably like 1,000 different companies.
Yeah. And as a fellow business owner, it'd be a good time to mention that there's this White Pages and other websites that post your information. It's how they get your shit to spam call you. You want to get off that shit?
Oh, just yeah, they don't have my info. They have my logins info. I paid them $300 to basically put their name on it, but I don't have to have my name on it.
Okay.
That's one of the advantages.
This is all things we're looking into because, you know, I want to grow this as kind of a bigger brand. You know, we want to do more than, I mean, we're slow growing, but we are growing, you know, and if things start to
How
get
much
little,
money do you bring in?
$600 in there. To be honest, right now, we're not, like I said, we're growing in terms of people that are, you know, followers and things like that. And it's more, with the more people that come, eventually we can start kind of branching out. But right now, we're still kind of slow to build, and it takes a little while with this kind of content. Especially since we're pretty much on alt tech. We can't really go to YouTube, because I've been banned off YouTube 4 times. I tried 4 different channels, and I mean, it's just ridiculous. So, I mean, it's slow to build, but of course, you know, I've got the MGTOW.TV, I've got the BitChute channel, and we've got a few on YouTube. And Twitter, we are on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
I got a few people on Twitter. So, yeah, I mean, we're slow to build, but, I mean, other than you...
How much money are you bringing in?
That's what I mean, other than you, I haven't really... Other than you, I haven't really seen much. That's one thing. I had one guy...
If you're not bringing in money, then I don't think that setting up an LLC would...
Okay. Well, I mean later. For future. When we do get to the point where the only problem, the only reason I haven't really been building money in is because I haven't kept up with our Patreon and stuff. And I keep telling people, you know, they'll give us, you know, we'll give them bonus stuff. But I've noticed that a lot of these websites and are these content creators would be like, you know, if you want to support the channel, do this. Because some of them will say, oh, well, we'll give you free content. We don't have any extra content because it takes so long for me to make the videos that I do that I don't have time to make extra special content for them. But I've noticed, like with Undead Chronic and some of these other guys, they say, hey, if you want to support the channel, just go over to here and support the channel. And I'd rather do it like that. I'm even thinking about going on the locals. You know, because, I mean, I want to try to branch out like that, but I don't want people to think they're getting something extra. I just want people to think, hey, you're supporting me.
Or like merchandise. That.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'd like to do merchandise later on. I've got a good, great artist. He can design good stuff. And even the guy that you're, you know, talking with right now, he found an amazing artist to do some fan work of my character, and if I could get that on a t-shirt or something like that, I think people would be into it. You know, we just gotta build catchphrases, slogans, things like that that people can get into. This is a slow build, you know. I started this about 3 years ago, and I've actually gotten to the point where I'm kind of building up relevancy. At least some people know who I am, and that's a cool thing. You know, I do want to build from that, but it takes a lot of work. You know, it's not just something that comes overnight. You know, and it's a very small field, but you know, we want to go into other things. Like I said, we wanted to start doing movie commentary and just all kinds of new things to bring people in and kind of give them that more red pill, because that's what we really want to do, is to help a lot of guys out. And there's a lot of guys that need this help. I've been online, I've listened to these guys talk, you know, all the incels and how horrible they are and how addicted they are to their looks. And I'm just like, man, there's so much more in life, you know. We want you to have fun and get in, you know, find some entertainment, find some joy in life instead of just constantly worrying about women and relationships. We want you to be happy. Like, hey, look at this. Or, you know, some of these guys are younger than me, way younger. So they don't know about a lot of the stuff that me and DP grew up with.
Oh, yeah.
So they're like, hey, look at this. Check this out. Hey, look at this cartoon. And they're like, oh, I want more of this. Can you guys do more? This is really interesting. I've never seen anything like this before. So that's really cool. And we just want to bring fun and red pill content to people. You know, as like Drexel said, there's too much doom and gloom in this beer. Not that things aren't getting crazy, because they are.
Well, if everyone's hearing the
but
miserable
at the
side
same
of it,
time,
they want to be a part of it.
But you know, I have a new catchphrase. It's like the doomers are gonna doom. Let the doomers doom. The coomers coom and enjoy the decline. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing right now. That's my thing.
All right.
Because, I mean, that's what we got. We got doomers all over the place. Oh, the world's so terrible. And then we got these, you know, I mean, a bunch of people in hentai. That's where I'm at.
Thank you.
But you get what I'm trying to do here.
If you try to incorporate a company, and the company is not profitable, the IRS will look at you and be like, that's not a company at all.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know. I would never, ever try to market this as a full company without being able to make some kind of profit. No. And I mean, that's what I'll do later. Like right now with the MGTOWN podcast, for an example, they are working on filing themselves as an LLC because they are indeed profitable. They do make money. You know, you have to pay to be on their Discord server. It's $5, $10, and $15, different tiers. I wouldn't do that here because we're not nearly as big. But they have a lot of people there. They've got over 10,000 followers on YouTube. They're on Twitch. They're on all kinds of other places. And they do very well. You know, they have the avenues that I don't have yet. We can't stream right now. But when I get the internet, we'll be able to stream and, you know, do a lot of this stuff live and catch people.
We're running it off his phone
we're running it off my phone right now. But, you know, we will get a little larger and as soon as I get this internet situation handled.
In the meantime, you want to keep a receipt of all your expenses.
Okay.
because there's another massive advantage. It applies to small businesses, but it also applies to contractors.
Okay.
And that is, as a contractor, since you are technically a business, a company, you are expected to provide your own equipment. As an employee, you are not expected to provide your own equipment. Now, why is that a good thing to be a contractor?
Okay.
The answer is because contractors can write off their expenses.
Yep.
You only get taxed on your profits. So the amount of money you put in from your client is not what you pay taxes on. The client pays you money. You use that money to buy materials, to buy equipment, and then you, whatever remains is your profit, and that's what you get taxed on. As an employee, you don't get to write stuff off, and the reason why is because as an employee, you aren't expected to provide your own equipment, so there's no reason for you to write stuff off. You can have nothing to write off. But as a contractor, you can write stuff off.
Okay, so if I want to share...
Many businesses go up and down over the years, and if you fuck up what you write off or get stupid with it, the IRS will fuck you up.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But so,
just keep it legit. Like, right. For example,
okay.
There's certain things just because I can doesn't mean you should. Like, I just simply tell them, yeah, everything I make, tax everything, fuck it, I'm not even going to play this game because it's the safest way.
Well, see,
all right.
I have an example. Let me just give you an example here. And basically what I was going to say is, all right, say I want a new microphone. Like, I'm using a Yeti right now, and I want, like, a Shure mic. I want, like, a good mic. So if I use this for my podcast, which I would be, you know, I'm assuming I would be making money. Now, this is assuming I'd be making money, and this was a company. Then could I write off my microphone as an expense to the IRS?
No.
Okay.
Assuming you have profits to write off.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's
fine. For me,
if they get suspicious, they'll flag you.
Yeah, like, I know. I've been flagged.
Don't write off stupid shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
One time I made such little money that I gave them, like, fucking scraps, and they had the nerve to call me and be like, is this all you really fucking made? And I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, there. Okay, but on with the next subject.
I'm going to explain how I do things, I guess. If you don't want to write anything off because you're worried about an audit, that's your choice. I can tell you, you are definitely in the minority, because one of the biggest advantages to being a contractor or a small business owner is that you can write stuff off, and you're supposed to write stuff off.
Okay.
Yeah. So I write off all my tools.
Okay.
I write off any materials I buy for projects. For the RV animation stuff, I write off the motors, the 3D printed stuff, the materials, all that. I write off, like, on my tax return, probably got, like, bought, like, 5 liters of, like, mineral oil and Vaseline. I'm sure the IRS is going to look at that.
Wow, yeah, they're like, yeah.
Yeah. I wrote off my sex doll. My sex doll is a business expense.
I didn't know you had one.
Yeah.
Well, I know that you. Well, I know that, but I didn't know. Well, do you? Do you actually, like, with your sex doll? Do you utilize your sex doll in the same way the doll owners do, or are you more using it for testing out your different equipment and things that you, like, your devices and things that you build? Is it more of a work object, or is it something that you're actually, you know, close
to? I mean, how am I supposed to develop the SRP without somewhere to, like? The whole point of the SRP is it inserts.
Well, yeah. Oh, I get that. But what I was saying is, do you have, like,
yeah, in order for him to patent something, he has to be able to prove that it works.
Right. Absolutely. So this isn't like your sex doll, like TFM and Celestina. This is more like this is a work doll that I use for developing my projects. Correct.
How do you think you knew how to shave?
I'm fairly confident the product that had TFM paid for Celestina, that would have been a business right off. Because he's also made so much money from Celestina.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So she would be also a legitimate business right off.
Somebody needs to tell him that.
I mean, he didn't pay for Celestina. So,
no, he
he can't get it off. But I'm sure he writes off all that stuff that he uses to make take care of Celestina. That's all legitimate tax right now.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you write out something like a sex doll, the IRS is going to come looking and they're going to be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So as long as you can justify your expense, you'll be fine.
Yeah. But, see, I had it. I had this happen. It was something stupid I did. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing that again. I mean, they finally gave me my money, but it was a long time in waiting. And I was like, okay, well, no big deal. I mean, it was months. It was damn near, I want to say it was...
almost.
Yeah, it was almost,
season.
No, it was almost, it was in, almost near summertime before I got my money. A lot of people got their money.
See, when you don't do it online,
well, no,
takes
I did it
a lot longer.
No, I did it online. But the problem is I did something wrong. I accidentally, selected something I shouldn't have. And, oh, yeah, they got me. And I said, oh. So, because, I mean, I actually was reading a Reddit thread, and you could see those Reddit threads. Some people get so dramatic. They're like, oh, it's been years, and it's like, oh, God. But, no, thankfully, I didn't have to worry about that. The problem was fixed, and I got my, I eventually got my refund, which was fairly small, but that's fine.
What was the problem?
I'm not going to describe it. It was just something I did stupidly. And it was fixed. It was not knowing, being naive, not doing my research. And the hardest part was signing into the IRS's verification network. Because let me tell you one thing. This is important. The IRS has a verification network. If you screw up, you have to give them a photo ID. You've got to give them proof of birth. You got to give them all kinds of things. And they have an agent that literally voice video chats you. And you have to show these documents to them in order to be able to access any of that information. And as soon as I did that and was able to verify myself, they took it. But the verification process is what's actually been causing people to get depressed because it doesn't seem to work that well. And, of course, I didn't do what Reddit did. I went in there, I asked questions, I got information, and I was able to get through it in just maybe a month or so. But some people, they've just been on the hold for the longest time. So,
we just need a sex toy test.
What you're talking about is personal IRS stuff. I'm sure they have some shit with that.
Well, yeah, I know that. But basically I'm saying that, you know, it is important for people to know that when you're... because we're talking about taxes here. So it's very important to know that if you screw up, the IRS has more security than they used to. Like, they will, you know, the verification process is very, very, very strict. So just be very careful when you do your taxes. I don't care where you do them. Just be very careful because they will get you, and it will be very hard at first, at least, to get it fixed.
Don't lie and write off like non-business expenses.
Absolutely, but people do it.
You'll be surprised at what is a legitimate business expense. Like for example, like I write off my internet bill and my phone bill. And so my phone and my computer. Mm-hmm. Like, I use all this stuff for work.
Sure.
I write off half my shit, like my Home Depot rent. Like all my stationery and office supplies, it's all written off. So you'll be surprised at what you can write off. And another thing is, like, a lot of the stuff that employees, even though employees aren't technically supposed to supply equipment, they kind of end up doing that, especially with their home offices, but they can't write it off. So if you do run a business, or if you're a contractor or a consultant, you need to make sure you write everything off, so that way you pay the fewer taxes. And so the government gets your money. Because, right. I mean, hey, it's a business.
Right.
If you're scared of the IRS, then yeah, don't do it. But
yeah.
Like, this is all, like, this is how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to write off the business expense.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I totally get that's what the you're other saying. Yeah, okay. Well, we're actually coming to time.
Well, does he have more to talk about? Because a lot of his time was...
Well, I know that, but, you know, we have more... We'll have, you know what I mean? We'll have Revy on again for, you know, continuing. Like, I think next you're going to get into more small business-related stuff. And this episode was mainly on contracting, so I'll go ahead and edit it and say that, you know, it was more contracting. And for people that want to know contracting...
I'm gonna rush through the rest of this. So get all the contracting stuff over.
Okay, go ahead. Well,
all right, so if you're young, you don't want to be a contractor. If you're old, you want to be a contractor. The reason why is because contractors get paid in proportion to their skill. As an employee, you kind of, the employee, you start getting paid, as let's say you're an engineer, you start getting paid, like, say, $70,000, and then at the end of their career, you get paid $100,000. Whereas as a contractor, at the beginning of your career, you get paid like nothing, basically, because you're not worth anything, because you don't know anything. But sure. Then by the end of your career, you're going to be pulling like $250,000.
Oh, yeah.
So it's better to be an employee when you're young and a contractor when you're old. The other thing is that as an employee, especially as a young employee, people will be more happy to train you, whereas as a contractor, you're expected to come in knowing everything. So when you're younger, you want to start off as an employee, then become a contractor. What I found has worked for me is to do both at the same time. So I have a day job 40 hours a week, and I also contract 20 hours a week. The contracting helps me, it gives me more money, and it also puts me in a better position so that when I do want to do full-time contracting, when I get older, I already have that partially set up.
Right.
So that's also, that's what I found works for me. The day job is for stability. The contracting is for excitement. Remember what I said about the future famine.
Okay.
If you work a day job and you work contracting, then the famine is gone because you're always going to have work to do with just your day job.
So,
and then when you get money for, when you get work for like contracting, you get a hell of a job. And that's what I recommend most people do. You should start off as an employee and you should start contracting just a little bit to dip your toe in it. And then as you get older, more of your work should be contracting and less of your employee.
Okay, I understand that. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, that grants you another advantage, which is that as a employee, especially if you have some kind of high profile employee work, like for example, I've always taken jobs that are prestigious. And what happens is when I contract, I can say, hey, my day job is X, and it's a super prestigious day job. And so basically, when I do contract work, the prestige of my day job allows me to bring in a stupid amount of money when I contract. So that's another synergy that goes on. Whereas if you only contract, you can say you're working on a bunch of different projects, but you never work on a big enough project to actually like boast. That's what I recommend most young men do. Is to help you build their career.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
How to become a contractor? You basically start networking. You'd be like, hey, I have some free time. If you want to hire me to work on a project, you know, whatever, you can hire me. And then sooner or later, someone's going to be like, yeah, how much money will it take to do that?
Okay. Yeah. So probably good to keep prices consistent.
Right.
Keep up with everything like that.
Now, without going into full detail, like, I don't care where you work, but what actually, you said you have a day job. What kind of work do you do for that? Is that just engineering?
For my day job?
Yeah.
I started off working for a research lab, right? And the research lab did super cool stuff. I worked for a research job in academia, and so they didn't pay me much, but it was super cool work. And then I used that to get it's not a FANG company, but we'll just say FANG equivalent. It's got as much prestige as a FANG company.
So what's
so that was my day job.
What's one, if there's any, is you said a lot of cool stuff. Is there anything you can like tell us that, you
or
know, that wouldn't, that what, yeah, like, or is it confidential? Is there anything that you did that's cool that you can talk to us about? Just out of curiosity.
I build a lot of robots. I've worked on... I don't want to give out too much information.
Don't give out too much.
I built a lot of really cool robots. I published papers.
Okay.
I've worked on military stuff, aerospace stuff.
Cool.
So,
yeah, I mean, because that kind of gives
automated
more...
automated away people's jobs.
That kind of gives more, you know, believability. Because there's people that are watching. You know how skeptics are. You know how the internet is.
Believable.
And there's people... Well, listen. Critics. This is the internet. There's a lot of critics and skeptics out there to be like, oh, this guy you've got on doesn't know what he's talking about. You know how that is. And basically, so it leads more credence to say, well, you know, you've worked on this, you've done this. So you're a guy that actually knows what he's talking about. And to be honest, like, I've interviewed enough people that when I can hear somebody, I was like, yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about. This is something that somebody that knows, you know, you're not just going over here bullshit and you're like, no, this is how to do this. This is how to do that. Yeah. And even DP noticed, you know, we know that you're the legitimate article. So if anybody says, oh, Grim, you've got some guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, that right there is your, I mean, if you didn't get it from the first and the second and this interview, then, I mean, I don't know what to say to you, but, you know, this guy's done a lot of work, and you like to keep yourself private, kind of, what you, and that's respectable.
I mean, most of the information I'm giving is pretty public knowledge, especially with the, like, if you Google, like, advantages of being a 1099 contractor, mm-hmm. right, you can get most of the information you could get.
But,
and I'm sure other people can present it better.
But can we be a little honest and say that a lot of people are lazy and don't even want to go Google that stuff?
Some people
and
don't
some,
know where to look.
Yeah, that's true,
what to
too.
Look for.
That's true, too.
Like, if someone...
I think what's going on is most people don't realize that you can do this.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, it's not even possible. Like, because most people are like... I had a friend who was a... he was a business partner in the past. Mm-hmm. He had a MBA degree from one of the top business schools in the U.S.,
Yes.
Right? Management, business administration, something like that. He was a business major. He didn't know how to create a company.
Oh, what?
Right?
Wow, that kind of...
Yeah, I was like, I mentioned that I had a company. I was like, oh, you have a company? I was like, yeah, it cost me $300. Like,
well, see, that to me is just...
He didn't know how to create a legitimate... He didn't know the legal process. He knew all this random theory shit, but he didn't know, like... I think most people don't realize they have this thing where it's like, oh, rich people and their companies. It's like most of the stuff that like the 1% does, a lot of the stuff the 1% does that you like you accuse them of doing,
mm-hmm.
like half of it is bullshit, but the other half you can do.
Right.
As a like normal, I won't say as a normal person, as a skilled professional.
Right.
Who has marketable skills. You can do most of the stuff at 1%.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, I believe it.
I think most people just don't realize.
But that's just
they don't consider it.
That's just so mind blowing to me that somebody that would get, you said, one of the most prestigious degrees in business and they don't even know how to go about starting a company. See, to me, that's like if somebody's teaching you how to build a house and you get a degree, like, okay, this is a construction, like I should know how to build. And then you say, well, and then a guy say, hey, I got a house that I built. He's like, really? How did you do that? That's kind of what it feels like to me. It's like they're supposed to teach you these skills, and then when you get out of there, but they don't have any real
experience. In his defense, he's an MBA, mm-hmm. which means he knows how to analyze large companies, and he knows a ton of theories.
Okay.
He probably knows, like, marketing analysis and stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But in terms of the actual process of if you want to create a company, you go search up registered agents, like, you know, create LLCs, and then you pay a lawyer, you know, so many money, and they'll do the work. And now you've got an LLC, you can open up a bank account, and then you can just start selling shit. Like, that's how you... and we can talk about this next time, but like that's how you run a business. And the MBA is just like they overcomplicate shit.
Well, see, that's one thing, and we'll talk about this next week. But I just want to, you know, get one thing out. You do say hire a lawyer. Now, for a lot of people, that's not exactly an easy thing. Oh, really?
How much?
$200.
That's not bad.
I can.
You have to find.
There's a legal firm, right?
Mm-hmm.
I paid them $300. They were like, okay, what's your name?
Okay.
What's the name of your company?
Okay.
Do you want, what are the additional services you want? I just, you know, I just fill out the form and they're like, okay. And then they have this boilerplate. They probably have this automated system where the form I fill out automatically fills up this boilerplate. They look it over, they sign it, they send it to the Secretary of State. A month later, the Secretary of State sends back documents saying your company's been formed. They have some additional boilerplate stuff. They mix it together. They send me the boilerplate stuff. Now I have a company. Wow. They're not really analyzing anything. They're just filing paperwork.
Okay. Oh, well, I didn't know you could do that all through Google now. That's amazing. And yet another thing that technology has made much easier.
This is technology. This is just like, I don't want to say, it's paperwork. You can hire a lawyer to defend you in a criminal case. That's going to cost you a stupid amount of money.
Yeah.
You hire a lawyer to, like, file paperwork. It's going to cost you, like, a couple hundred. But usually these lawyers have, like, they have, like, boilerplate everything. And they're just basically a factory.
Right. That's how these game companies can afford all these darn lawyers. Because they're just like, oh, yeah, well, hire a bunch of lawyers. You're trying to make your own Mario game. Nope, can't have that. And they just hire a whole bunch of lawyers like that. They're like, flip their fingers. So, yeah.
That's different. We're talking about filing paperwork.
Yeah, paperwork's different.
To file the paperwork required to create a company, you can even do that yourself. You don't need a lawyer. It's just it's so much easier to just hire a lawyer and be like, here's $300, do it for me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And they're paid to get it.
Well,
right.
Also, they can read the legalese and a lot of the things that some people might not understand.
They don't read the legalese, though.
Okay.
That's the thing. That's my associate. They don't read it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, like, it's just boilerplate, right? They created this template, and then you fill out your name, and you fill out the name of your company, and it auto-populates the template, and then they give it to the Secretary of State.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like playing a Yu-Gi-Oh card to them. Like, the card has the same rules, it's just, okay, he wants to play this card.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good way. I mean, that's a good way for those that are more familiar with, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! See, I'm more of a Magic the Gathering guy, so I didn't really get into that one. But, yeah, for those that I know are more familiar with Yu-Gi-Oh!, that's probably a very good way to...
Five-card stay.
But think about it this way.
I'm really like, card game. I'm just a Yu-Gi-Oh! Guy.
Right, I got you.
Think about it like filing your taxes, right? Mm-hmm. When you file your taxes, you hire an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
And the accountant just does, like, standard, like, form stuff. Like, this is something you could do yourself if you had enough patience. But you don't, so you hire an accountant to do it. This is the same thing. Like, the accountant isn't actually doing anything fancy. They're just, like, they're just putting your numbers in a spreadsheet.
That's it.
And then it's auto-generated in a form. The lawyer's doing the same thing, just with, like, legal documents instead of, like, tax returns.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I took accounting in high school, so I know exactly what you're talking about when... I mean, yeah, a lot of people can do it themselves, but some people aren't great about it. Like, I always had a missing $600 or something that I couldn't
find. If you're super, super cheap, you don't need a lawyer. You can file the paperwork yourself. It's just a pain in the ass. It's just, like, it's just kind of confusing because then you have to read everything and understand everything.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas if you hire a lawyer, it's just like, they just tell you, like, what's your name, what's your company, you know, and they figure out everything for you.
Well, I got another question.
More
I think
importantly, they put their, when they file the paperwork, they put their own information in, so that way they can't be traced to you. It only traces to the lawyer.
I got another question for you based on this. Now we can talk more about this a little later, but I just, you know, this is one last thing. I was in, you know, music, obviously, and of course musicians do make money, and there's a lot of bands and things that sell their merchandise. They make money. That's what I'm saying. They have merchandise. They do it all independently. They're not hired by a record company. They do everything themselves. So in this case, are they considered a legitimate business? You know, is your as an artist, are you a business if you are profitable by yourself, if you are selling your merchandise, if you, you know, I mean, basically have a lawyer sign all that kind of thing, like you said.
You have a manager and a...
Yeah, you manage yourself. You self-manage, you self-do all that.
So in terms of creating a business, there's different types of businesses. If you don't file any paperwork, you're what's known as a sole proprietor.
Mm-hmm.
It basically means I'm running a business, but I didn't file any paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if you didn't file any paperwork, then yeah, you're a sole proprietor. That's a legitimate business.
Okay.
You don't get an EIN, so there's a lot of, you can't do banking. And you can't, like, when people ask for your social security number, you have to actually give your own social security number. But if you file the paperwork with your LLC, you get an EIN number, and you can like open bank accounts and stuff.
Yeah, because Because I'm not really sure if any of these musicians have
LLCs. If you don't file the paperwork, like, for example, your Grimlord show thing, right? You bring in some money. Your Grimlord show thing would be considered a sole proprietor show.
Yeah, that's fine.
Which is a fancy way of saying you didn't put in the efforts to create a real company.
Right.
But, I mean, hey, you brought in money, right?
Exactly.
Hey, I mean, it's true. Hey, everything starts kind of small, you know. It took us a while to get to where we were, you know. We started on BitChute. We moved over to MGTOW. And now we're back on kind of BitChute again because, I mean, no, it's not.
Grows every week, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, it's whatever. We got a lot of different people. I want to go to more. I tried to get on Odyssey. I did one hentai video, and they're like, nope, we can't show this on our website.
You got to find a way to market it.
Well, no. It's not that. The problem is my content, even if I edit it, because I tried this. Odyssey was like, I'm sorry, we can't do this. This is a mature content, and you have to use our app to view it. Which means that people can't go to odyssey.com and look at our videos. They won't show up. So they forced them to download the app in order to watch mature content. Which is kind of crazy, because I thought it was like a free speech company. That's how TFM said it was anyway. But a lot of these, you know, there really is no place for our kind of content. And if there was, I'm pretty sure we'd be able to make money off of it, because then I would be able to start,
website?
Charging.
Yeah. Oh, MGTOW.tv, right? You got MGTOW.tv.
I'm still thinking allegorical entertainment's the way to go. The way we sell the robots as, like, the new hobbyist market.
Well, see, the problem
is, same way we...
when you do adult content, it's still taboo, you know, because it's here in the States. It's still taboo. There's no site, like, there's no, other than Pornhub, which I guess I could make money from, but I don't know how many people would actually go and look at my content there. And
well,
I'm not.
Go ahead and put it up.
I could try.
I mean, you can leave it on everywhere
else.
I
can try it, but I
the
mean,
more places
it's just
you have
like.
It up, the better.
Maybe it's an option. But I was trying to find something a little bit more geared toward games, where it's just those kind of games. Because that's what we do. We do a lot of adult games. Yeah. We're not showing, like, porn. We're showing games with adult content and stories and things like that. So people that go to, like, Pornhub,
well,
they're looking for...
He's more into, you have something hard, solid
right.
to sell instead of...
Well, we are selling entertainment.
There's a guy at a bank on Pornhub doing the wholesome shit.
Really? I don't know. Maybe that's what we need to do,
though. His whole Pornhub handle's like, I make a video about holding your hand and telling you a bedtime story, or like this romantic crap.
We could try it. Well,
I don't go to Pornhub for that.
We'll try it, cause like, I mean, it's a market that I'm not used to. See, every website has a different viewership. We don't know what Pornhub people want.
Oh,
they may just want the sex. They
I'll
may
tell
not
you,
want me to read.
The creepiest thing about Pornhub is the being a dick. You want to listen to a Romanian man talk?
Yeah, they have
a
bunch of
during the sex.
Yeah, they have all that.
Oh, it'll
and
kill
you. It's not that great. So it's our time.
Oh yeah.
Maybe it's our time to shine. Even though I was told that hentai content was kind of banned from Pornhub, like they tried to get rid of a lot of that kind of stuff because it was considered demure and childlike, even if the character is an adult, which I think is silly, but it's their website and their rules, and there's really not much you can do about it. That's why...
I would shoot safe bets at first, like Mega Busty Bimbo whatever adventures, and just pick something so blatantly adult they can't yell at you for it.
Yeah,
I guess... I don't know. It feels impure.
And you could play that.
It's supposed to be. It's on porn.
I know that, but you know, I have a friend that she actually makes money off her content. She was doing adult content, and she was doing it on X Videos. And she told me that X Videos deleted all her content. And she did not do anything that was too out of character.
I have noticed X videos.
Yeah, stuff like that. And she's like, oh, they're banning my videos on porn sites. I was like, has it gotten that bad? Are they, you know, and this is hentai content. This isn't real or CGI. This is actual just little, just her reading games, just like I do.
But she's got a bigger following. Probably because it's taking up server space.
Maybe. I don't know.
Along with everyone else that tries doing it.
But a lot of times they think that it's going to attract children, which is really stupid because, I mean, what are children going to be doing on a porn site anyway?
Oh, yeah, they want to hear reviews all day.
They want to hear us read games. Sure they do. No. Yeah. But yeah, we're going a little bit too far off into the wilderness. But yeah, thank you so much for being here with us again, Revy, and you know, always entertaining fun. the conversation and answering. Yeah, we do appreciate your stuff a lot, and I really hope that you guys listening will appreciate this stuff and take something from it. And don't be afraid to ask questions in the comments section.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if BitChute's going to ask anything. They can ask questions now. I have my comment section open there. So, yeah. Revy, if you go in there, you go on MGTOW.TV. If anybody has anything you want to ask him, just go ahead, put it in the comment section. And I'm pretty sure Revy will see it and answer your question right there.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely looking up CNC desktop machines and
3D printers. It's fascinating stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like learning about the FGC9 and all that stuff last week, it's just been very, very helpful. So at any rate, we're going to go ahead and get off here for now. And this will be the Grimlord Dead Penetration and Revy Innovations with us once again. Uh-huh. And we will see you guys next time on Grim Interviews.
All right, later.
All right.